It's a real honor and pleasure to be with you this morning. And I think the genius in having this Zen thread time, as I experience it, is that it helps, it's an assignment, you know, it's like it helps gives one an opportunity to put in perspective what's going on for you in your practice. And I've certainly felt that in the other threads that I've had the pleasure of listening to, that each one of you has taken it that way and in your own way seriously. And that's meant a lot to me in terms of the power of the Sangha. So that's what I'm going to talk about for a few minutes, is my experience kind of this week leading up and up till now. What began to happen is I began to realize that I didn't have a clue about what would be useful to you all, and that's in this morning especially. It's as I was sitting, I was thinking, you know, I've had a good number of years on the planet, and so there are a lot of threads. There's so many different ways I could approach those different threads. You know, and as the week progressed, I realized that that's what was coming up for me. All these moments of memories and images, and just in the last few minutes, I was feeling that it's as if the threads was a weaving with knots, and each little knot is a story or a memory that somehow is, you know, informed who I am as a person in relationship to the practice. Some of them that seem to have nothing at all to do with Buddhism, but are all part of that net. And that net really is what holds me, and that the Sangha, I'm in that space with my companions, even if they don't know it. So what I'll do is I think I'm going to drop a few images into the space, and then I think on Wednesday I had an experience that enabled me to put something in writing that I'll share in a little bit, which is probably as good as I can do. The history of my practice goes back to my father, and who is this extraordinary being who was, you know, as my sister said, he was a troubled genius. You know, he grew up in the jazz age and played Dixieland in Chicago and strip joints when he was in high school, never graduated, never went to college. Could basically do anything he decided to do. So he was a very intimidating presence who let his love for me show as a thread that he created, which just meant that he could look at me, and he gave me the message that we shared some deep understanding about life. And that whatever other destructive things were happening in the family, we could reconnect in this level. And that, so there was something there that it was as if he was planting a seed that he didn't have the capacity of doing anything more with, but to show me his life when it was good as well as it was bad. And so when he, right before he died, I knew that he'd somehow implanted in me this phrase, "I love you for everything that you are," which was the last thing that I said to him over the phone from my desk in the New Jersey Department of Education. And his wife said he was at that point, he was in a kind of a coma, that a tear rolled down his cheek. So there's that. And in fact, my interest in in Buddhism came by way of Hinduism first, and Gandhi, and experiences I had as a student in a small mountain village in Switzerland where I was in college, and experiencing people who had connections with Jung, and some early LSD experiences that kind of opened the gate there, a meeting with Suzuki Roshi on my way to India, where I was spent 2 years in the Peace Corps, and had ambitions of certain kinds that I couldn't realize because of the Vietnam War and being a conscientious objector. And so there, through all that, I was a kind of a pretend student of Buddhism. I would read things and not really understand what I was reading, but believe that I should be reading it, or sit and not understand the Diamond Sutra at all, but realize that it felt good being there. And then I had a long period where I can only say it was like the family time, where I had a little altar, but I would meditate a little bit, but I had no sangha, I had no instruction. And my family at that point just knew this was dad being a little crazy. This is dad's craziness, you know, and we have to put up with it. And so it wasn't, that was about more than 20 years went by like that. And then I found that there was a Dharma Dhatu in Philadelphia. And I went there and went to a retreat in Karmacholin in Vermont, Trungpa's tradition. So there were these moments where I had more deepening contact with real practice. And then my wife went and died of breast cancer, leaving me with some single parenting that also kind of shaped me in, I think, a fundamental way. I didn't really have a meaningful practice until I was in my early 60s. Before then, the other practice that entered my life was dance, conscious dance. And that didn't happen. I didn't encounter that until I was in my early 50s. And I found that I never thought I was a very good sitting meditator, but I did it anyway. But the conscious movement practice somehow brought things through my body that I couldn't experience easily in sitting. And so they became my kind of my twin practices. The Gabriel Roth, who was the person who I learned from, and I had a chance to really experience her deeply in the last year of her life. One of the things that she's famous for having said that I'll tell you is, energy moves in waves, waves move in patterns, patterns move in rhythms. A human being is just that, energy, waves, patterns, rhythms, nothing more, nothing less. And that was what she asked us to experience, to engage with in the conscious dance practice. So that opened me in many different ways. And when I finally had kind of retired and was able to find a sangha to relate to and start really practicing on a regular basis, what I had already knew about myself, but that I really discovered through that, was that I'm not a very disciplined person in many ways, but my way to deal with that is to put myself in position in situations where I respond having made a right choice. That I found that I've been able to do that through a lot of times in my life. And so the Sangha to me is is that that place, is a place where I make the decision to practice with you all. And that kind of leads me to the to Wednesday. And I had an opportunity to dance virtually on Wednesday with a teacher who I value a lot. And I've not talked to her about whether she's encountered Buddhist practice much, but it comes through in her dance teaching. And she ended the session with a poem by Rumi. And as soon as I heard it, I realized, oh, that's this week. That's this week I'm doing Zen Threads. And that's what this poem was about. So the poem, I'm going to try it. I'll see if I can share this for you now. See how I do this. I got to go to share here. Here. Can you see that? So this is the poem. You are the only student you have. You are the only faithful student you have. All the others leave eventually. Have you been making yourself shallow with making other eminent? Just remember, when you're in union, you don't have to fear that you'll be drained. The command comes to speak, and you feel the ocean moving through you. Then comes, be silent, as when the rain stops and the trees in the orchard begin to draw moisture up into themselves. And I realized that was my experience of the week has been finding something that to me is a very important part of the practice, a certain level of openness that if you can be attentive to it, provides you with next steps or what you might need. So from that, I realized that Thursday was not going to work because I had some major oral surgery on Thursday. And I figured I'm not going to put anything together. So Wednesday I sat down and wrote this poem. And because I realized that for me, practice has always been a bit of a struggle, and that I figured this may be something that's useful just to bring out for all of you as well, as what is practice. So here we go. Practice, what a struggle. Sitting, walking, dancing into being shouldn't be hard. Learning ways around and through my resistance. Restive means recalcitrant, obstinate, even disobedient. Disobedient to whom? Where is this person hiding who instructs me to do this, not that? Time for a heart-to-heart, I think. In the meantime, in case he doesn't show up, better take a crack at this myself. Neurodharma has one answer, turning straight states into traits. Then there's always just sit. Cones might show another way, imbibe the spirit of practice, then it can't desert you. But what if all fails and the cone laughs at you? All those faces before your parents were born, where is yours? Found sitting, walking, dancing, and sometimes doing what needs to be done. A semblance of a human being, called into life, time spun by sanghas and tribes, family, partners, friends, and souls, distant and close by, present, past, and future, by weeds, flowers, sun, and moon, a planet full of promise into which practice is born. So that's kind of what I've got. I also, one final note, that somehow the koan that Sarah's giving us to work on this morning, the first part of it, in the center of the cosmos, inside heaven and earth, there is one treasure hidden in the body. I said, oh, there it is again. I'm talking to you about, for me, how the practice is in my body, and the dance helps me release that. The experience, the similarity to the dance practice that might be of interest to you is that there's an experience, it's this kind of minor Kensho kind of experience that can happen in the dance. But what I learned after doing this for a couple of years was that it only happens when I'm in authentic movement. And it's hard to describe what that is, except that what I know is that it only happens after, it can't happen when I start, very rarely. It happens only when I work through in my movement, so that I'm no longer caught up in the last hour that I've spent or what's in my head. It's when my head is released and the movement takes on a quality, creative quality of its own. And then I realized that I'm fully in my body. And that's a small moment of truth. So thanks for listening and giving me the opportunity to share some kind of random moments.